Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And there is just so much to talk about. Last week, if you didn't get a chance to listen to the show, I was actually the guest. I had my sister-in-law come in and be the host, and she interviewed me about some recent UFO events. So if you didn't get a chance to listen, the shows, again, are archived on the BBS website, and check it out. I think you'll find it very interesting. I've talked about some new interviews I've done with people who have had some very incredible close encounters, and stuff like that. I think you'll find it very interesting. So if you get a chance, take a listen. But let's just get right to our guest tonight, because, wow, I am honored. He has had some really amazing experiences and has actually put together a book. His name is Joe Alexander. That's Joe Alexander, and he's written a new book called Renewing Your Life Force. Now, this sounds like quite an interesting story. It starts back at least into 1971, when our guest Joe ran into a high school friend who was transformed, seemed to be a completely different person, and Joe found out that his friend was actually practicing yoga through the Self-Realization Fellowship. And one thing led to another, and our guest tonight, Joe Alexander, started experimenting and with various aspects of spiritual disciplines. He was initiated in Ajapa yoga, a breathing technique, and from there he got initiated into other fields of knowledge, including raw food diet, rebirthing, kundalini yoga, co-counseling, dynamic meditation, breatharianism, that's something I definitely want to hear more about, toning, hatha yoga, and just so much more. And he actually did this for many years, and this is what the first half of his book is all about, his adventures, his spiritual adventures, as he's uncovering and going through these various spiritual disciplines. And what I really love about this book is part two is a practical section on how anyone who's reading can actually use these techniques themselves. And he simplifies it into three basic categories, so we'll get a lot more into that later on in the show. So I want you all to give a nice, warm welcome to our guest tonight, Joe Alexander, the author of Renewing Your Life Force. Joe, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Preston. That was a very nice introduction you gave me.
I'm very interested to hear your story, and I'm wondering, before you got involved in all of this, I mean, what kind of, were you skeptical of these types of things? And, I mean, how did you feel about spiritual disciplines and, you know, and spiritual enlightenment, I guess, is what I'm getting towards?
Okay, I guess you could say I was kind of agnostic. You know, I didn't have any strong beliefs in any way. That was one thing that I got from my parents was they weren't trying to keep me away from religion. They weren't trying to put me into any religion. They kind of left me on my own to, you know, go wherever I wanted that way. And so I didn't have any strong beliefs in any particular religion. And I was a little bit on the skeptical and scientific side, you might say, you know, kind of agnostic, a little bit inclined towards atheism, but not completely closed-minded. And anyway, what got me into the spiritual search, you might say, was that I was just very depressed when I was a kid. I just didn't seem to have much get up and go. I didn't seem to, you know, have much ambition. I just didn't have much of a social life because I was so shy and so depressed all the time and so anxious and nervous and worried and this kind of thing. And so I was looking for some way, you know, to be happier. I was looking for some way to put my problem down. I kind of analyzed my problem, and I figured I need more energy. You know, I need to find some way to have more energy so I can, you know, just feel more ambitious. I'll want to work more. I'll want to accomplish something more. You know, have more energy to be more outgoing, talk to people, all this kind of stuff. So I just deliberately set out looking for ways and means to have more energy. I was very specific in my goal. And so, you know, the first kinds of things I tried were like, exercise and so-called health foods. And I found that eating things like blackstrap molasses and whole wheat bread and stuff like that, that didn't really help me. But exercise was kind of helpful. You know, if I would go out and walk fast for a few miles when I was feeling down and depressed, you know, that would help. But the first thing that really showed promise, the first thing that I saw that really would help me was, like you said in the introduction, I ran into this high school friend that I hadn't seen for a couple of years, and he had been practicing yoga from Yogananda's Self-Realization Fellowship course, the correspondence course. And he was transformed. I could see it. You know, he had a light in his eyes that had never been there before. He had a glow in his face that he had never been there before. He had intelligent and wise things to say like he had certainly never had before. And so I decided, yeah, this looks like the way to go. I gotta get into this. And so, but I didn't send for the self-realization course, mail order lessons. What I did was, I was living in Toronto at that time, and I saw a poster that somebody had gone around town sticking up and advertising a lecture on Ajpa yoga by a 90-year-old yogi named Swami Janardhan. So I went to that, and I was extremely impressed with Swami Janardhan. He was 90 years old. He was very frail-looking, you know,
right.
Long white hair, and he looked like skin and bones and everything. But he had more energy than any teenager I ever saw, and he talked, you know, just like rapid fire. You know, there was none of the slowing down in his voice that you generally hear when people are over 70 years old or so. And
wow.
His movements, you know, were swift and strong like a young person. And so I went for initiation in the Ajpa yoga breathing technique that he was offering. And do you have any questions from that point?
Did it cost money? I mean, is anyone allowed to just go to places like this and get themselves initiated?
Yeah, he was initiating anyone that would come, and he was asking for $20. And it was interesting because he traveled with a young disciple named Ramesh. He himself, Swami Janardhan, didn't speak English, so Ramesh translated for him. And Ramesh told me at my initiation that when they had first left India and started traveling to Europe and America, they didn't charge anything, and hardly anybody came for initiation. So then they decided to start charging $2, and more people would come. And then they decided to start charging $10, and they found that still more people would come for initiation. And by the time they got to Toronto, they were charging $20, and they had... And in Toronto, a couple hundred people came for initiation, and everywhere they went, you know, they were having hundreds of people in each city, apparently, coming for initiation. And I don't know where they went from $20. I have no idea what the what the going rate is now. But anyway, their experience seemed to contradict the law of supply and demand. You know, it seemed like the more they charged, the more customers they got.
Ironic. Very strange. So tell us more about this yogi. So you studied under him for how long?
Well, I didn't exactly study under him. I got initiated by him. I learned the technique. I didn't have much close contact or communication with him, but I did practice that technique for about a year. And it was a breathing technique that was designed to retain energy that's normally exhaled. They said it was invented by ancient rishis in India thousands of years ago. And anyway, my experience was that as I was walking home from the initiation, that was in 1972, you know, I started practicing the technique, and just all of a sudden, I felt like I was walking on a cloud, and like my body was just about weightless, you know, featherweight, and I was just full of energy like I had never experienced before in my life, and full of the joy of life like I had never experienced before in my life, and, you know, I seemed to be able to think more clearly and objectively about things that I've been more confused and, you know, biased and prejudiced about before, and it was like, it was a revelation, it was enlightenment to me, and I knew that there was a God, and I knew what God was like, I knew the nature, and characteristics of God and so on, and I saw that I had, you know, a spark of the Spirit of God in me, a spark of the Divine Spirit in me, and so it was quite a dramatic experience of enlightenment when I started practicing that Ajpa yoga, and so I practiced that for about a year, and then I got very interested in the teachings of another guru called Guru Maharaji. He was known as the 13-year-old perfect master at that time, and I got initiated in that. He called his teaching the knowledge. It was kind of meditation on there was four techniques in the knowledge. There was the inner light, inner sound, inner nectar, and inner music. And
right.
The one that you practiced most was the inner sound current, or word, he called it. He would quote from the Gospel of John, you know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And that's the only straightforward explanation of what that word is that I've ever, you know, come across. You know, all the other explanations I've, you know, heard of what the word are quite convoluted and improbable and unlikely and so on like that. But when you practice meditation on the word, as Guru Maharaj taught you, you saw that the word, the inner sound current, you know, was from the beginning. You know, it's eternal, and it
right.
what and it is with God, and it is God. And so anyway, I practiced that for all during the 70s, and it really helped me start making something of my, you know, otherwise heretofore somewhat wasted life. And then when I heard about the raw food diet in 1973, another follower of Guru Maharaj loaned me a book called Rational Fasting by Arnold Ehret. And this talked about the raw food diet. And Arnold Ehret was a German, and in the early 1900s, he had got very sick with a kidney disease that his doctors in Europe told him was incurable. And so then he tried naturopathic treatments, and he found that he would get some temporary relief from some of the naturopathic treatments that were available in Europe at that time. And then he tried fasting and a very natural diet of just raw fruits and vegetables with some raw seeds, too. And he found that on this kind of diet, he just completely recovered from his kidney disease. And not only did he completely recover from his disease, but he said also he felt, you know, much better than ever before in his life. He had more energy. He had, spiritual enlightenment. He called it paradise health. And so it was the raw food that did that, the raw food diet. This is one of the strangest things about human life is that, you know, every wild animal on earth lives on 100% raw food. And humans at one time in the past must have lived on 100% raw food. And somehow now we think it's absolutely necessary and good to cook our food. But there are a few thousand people in the world, you know, like me, that have tried living on just about all raw food or completely raw food for some years. And what a person finds if they stop cooking, like everybody thinks is so necessary, and just lives on natural raw food again, is that you feel amazingly much better. You're about 90% of your health problems disappear. You have much more energy than you ever thought was possible. You feel connected to nature, connected to earth like never before. And it just makes life so much richer. And you feel so much more youthful when you get older. And it just makes life so much more rich, you know, and wonderful that, you know, you would like the whole way, you know, that the whole world would be a better place if more people would do that.
Right,
it would,
right.
It would, yeah. So, well, so that was the next thing that I got into after the knowledge. Yeah.
I hear that they're having great success curing diabetes using raw food diets. I've heard a number of studies about that have come out recently. So people are beginning to catch on. Thank goodness. Now, when you say a raw food diet, does that include things like bread?
No, I don't eat any bread. Once in a while, I will eat some grains, like something I've done fairly often in the past. I haven't done it much recently, but you can get wheat seeds, you know, wheat berries, and soak them in cold water for about 18 hours and then pour out the water and let them start to get a little spread on them and then eat that. And that's the closest thing to bread that I've eaten for a long, long time. And otherwise, mostly I live on fruits and vegetables. I'd say about 75% fruits and vegetables. And then I also eat some sprouted seeds, like I like lentils, and sometimes I'll eat raw peanuts and raw sunflower seeds and some other kinds of raw nuts and so on like that, and occasionally a little bit of raw milk cheese, and occasionally a little bit of raw fish, too. But mostly I'd say at least 75% fruits and vegetables, and of the rest, mostly raw, soaked, and sprouted seeds of some kind or another.
Well, I imagine that that's going to be a movement that people are going to be, you know, going towards for more and more strongly as time goes on.
And there might be some incentive, politically some incentive coming up, because if they pass this healthcare plan, then the government's going to take over healthcare. They're not going to give you much of any good healthcare, and you better learn how to take care of yourself if you want to be healthy and have a good life.
Exactly. Exactly. So then you did rebirthing. I've got a few books on that. That's pretty interesting. So can you tell us a little bit about your experiences with that?
Yeah, that's something I found out about in 1979. And rebirthing is something invented by a man named Leonard Orr and some associates of his in San Francisco during the 1970s. And Leonard Orr had this idea that the reason his life wasn't complete joy and complete bliss was that the birth trauma was still stuck in his system, stuck in his subconscious mind, stuck in his body. And he was still suffering from the pain from the past because he was still, you know, kind of endlessly reliving somewhat the trauma of birth. And so he started trying to figure out a way to re-experience the memory of birth so as to you know, discharge the trauma of it from his system. And he figured if he could do this, then, you know, he would be much more in a consciousness of complete bliss and joy all the time without the pain and trauma from the past, you know, still kind of hanging around bothering him in the present. And so he started spending hours at a time, you know, soaking in a bathtub full of warm water and breathing through a snorkel, you know, completely immersed in the water, trying to recapture the memory of having been in his mother's womb just before he was born. And he found that breathing fast and deep through that snorkel would start to give him experiences, you know, as if he was reliving birth, and would start to release what he called negative mental mass from his system. And so this was how he and his associates developed rebirthing. And then later on they discovered that the warm water and the snorkel wasn't really necessary. All that was really necessary was the deep and rapid breathing. And so rebirthing is something that if you will lie down comfortably in a place where you won't be disturbed for the next few hours, and you start breathing as deeply and rapidly as you can through your mouth, you know, then you go through a period of, then generally what will happen is you'll start to feel some tingling in your hands and feet, and then you'll go through a period where you'll feel pain from the past that's been suppressed, kind of stuck in your system. It'll kind of come up, and you'll feel kind of reliving maybe some trauma from the past for a while, for a few minutes. And you keep on breathing through the whole thing, and sometimes your hands cramp up, sometimes you go through some kind of unpleasant and painful physical symptoms. But you just keep on breathing through the whole thing, and there's no danger as long as you keep on the breathing. And then after you've gone through all these traumatic feelings that come up, then all of a sudden you feel like a great burden, you know, like a 50-pound stack of cement that you've been carrying on your shoulders all your life has been kind of released from you, and you feel lighter and freer and more joyful than ever before in your life. And after that, and the effects are permanent of rebirthing. You know, every time you do rebirthing and get one of these releases, the effects are permanent. You feel, you know, permanently freed from some burden of, you know, trauma and pain from the past that you were carrying. And you find that, you know, you have more genuine, true love for other people. You feel more genuine joy of life. Your thinking is more clear, more objective, less biased and prejudiced in any way. You can see things more clearly how they really are. And the more you do this rebirthing, of course, the more the accumulated effects add up, so that more and more, you know, you are raised to a higher level of consciousness, you might say.
Right. Wow. Sounds very interesting. Yeah, I've read some of Leonard Orr's books, so it's very interesting hearing about it. And I've never tried it, but I'm going to have to try that, because it sounds like it's, you know, another really important step on sort of the pathway to enlightenment, which is kind of really what I like about your book. It's like a guidebook on the way to enlightenment. Because you tried a lot of other stuff, which is very interesting.
Yeah, it seemed like one thing led to another. It seemed like, you know, it's the way I look back on it now, it seems like God was leading me from one thing to another to another, and each thing was like just the preparation I needed for the next step. And so, like for instance, practicing knowledge gave me the insight, gave me the perception, gave me the ability to see that I had something that Maharaji called the crazy mind. You know, something in your mentality that kind of cooked up delusions and kind of misled you and, you know, deceived you and so on like that. And so then I got started, then I started getting interested in, well, where did this crazy mind come from? And is there some way to get rid of this crazy mind permanently? Because the meditation would kind of take you above the crazy mind for a while you were meditating, put you into a higher space for a while. But then if you weren't meditating for a while, you would come right back down. The crazy mind would be there as much as ever. So I started getting interested in where the crazy mind come from. Can I get rid of it permanently? And rebirthing was something that started showing me, you know, just where the crazy mind came from and how to permanently get free of it. And then one thing led to another. After rebirthing, I moved to, I had been living in Northern California when I was doing rebirthing. And then I came here to Fayetteville, Arkansas, where I live now. And here I met a very interesting fellow who called himself Pan. And he persuaded me to go visit some people in a nearby town called Westport. And they were running an ashram for a guru who was called Dhyan Yogi Matasiddhantas. And Dhyan Yogi Matasiddhantas taught something called Kundalini Mahayoga. And they persuaded me to take initiation in Kundalini Mahayoga. and I practiced that for about 2 years, and that was extremely good. That was a technique that you would get a Shaktipat initiation from the guru, and that would give an initial boost to your kundalini. And then you would meditate by concentrating high in your head, and that this would raise the kundalini to upper chakras. And you would actually feel, you know, it was very real, extremely real. You know, you would definitely feel energy moving, you know, up your spine and into your head, and you would definitely feel energy being raised, you know, up into your higher chakras. And this was a most interesting experience to do this because, for one thing, as the kundalini moved up, it would break through energy blockages in your system. You would have sometimes these involuntary movements that they call kriyas, and that would be the kundalini dissolving energy blockages. And the effects of that were somewhat similar to rebirthing. You would feel permanently relieved of something of a burden, you know, of a weight that you had been carrying all your life.
Oh, interesting.
And then I found that when I got, you know, kundalini raised into my upper chakras, the main effect I felt there was that I felt that I was much less just concerned for my personal life. You know, like before I had been very personally centered, very centered on my own person, my own life and so on like that. And, you know, I was interested in the success of my own business and I was interested in, you know, my own life and so on like that. But when I got kundalini into my upper chakras, it was like I felt much more interested in the whole big picture. And I felt much more interested in, say, not just my own business, but in national and world economics and how we could make the economic system work to benefit everybody. And when I got kundalini into my upper chakras, like, okay, I make my living as an artist. I've always been interested in being an artist. And instead of just being interested in how I could make some money, you know, from my own abilities as an artist, you know, like before, when I raised my kundalini, I started getting interested in, you know, reading and studying about the whole great panorama of art history and art down through the centuries and everything like that. You know, I started getting much more interested in the whole big picture. And you said at the start of your show, you know, that your show was about UFOs and the paranormal and so on like that. And before that, I hadn't been all that much interested in such things. But, you know, when I experienced more of an expansive consciousness, you know, from getting kundalini in my upper chakras, you know, I started to feel very interested in things like UFOs and what was that, what else was going on out there in the universe and, you know, life on other planets and so on and subjects like that.
Right. Well, that's another thing I kind of wanted to ask you about because I've talked to a number of people who have experienced their raising of their kundalini and done, you know, some meditation myself. And it opens up, as you say, your chakras, which opens you up to a higher awareness, as you said. And in my own experience, I experienced a lot of precognition and what do you call it, astral traveling. And I wonder, did you experience anything, you know, that we consider paranormal?
I haven't had any real clear precognition. I've just kind of developed a sense of, an intuitive sense more, you know, much more so than I used to have of just how things really are. It's not like I have precognition of specific events or anything like that, but I've just kind of developed much more, I think, of a clear intuitive sense of how things really are, you know, how life really is and so on like that.
Right.
And, but as far as out-of-body travel, astral projection and so on like that, no, I have had a few experiences like that, but it's not something that I've developed any ability to do regularly, or it's not something I experience often. Have had a few experiences along those lines, but you know, nothing that's regular or frequent.
Oh, interesting.
Is that something that you can do yourself at will?
Certainly not at will. At one point, you know, in the past, I did get really good at it, but it takes, you know, a lot of focus, and it's relatively easy to do, I think, if you're willing to put in the time and discipline. But, I got good at it, and I can't do it at will, you know, I do have a lot of them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wondered, which, you know, now you did other types of meditations as well. What do you mean by dynamic meditation?
Okay, that was something developed by Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. And I read a lot of books by Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh in the early 80s. And And Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh was a very unusual guru. You know, most gurus, it seems like they learn one tradition and then pass that on to their disciples. But Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh was, he was kind of much more exploratory. It seemed like he would study as many traditions as he could, as many religions as he could. He also studied modern psychology and so on like that, and he was very enlightened himself. And so he didn't just teach from one tradition. He taught from, you know, all the many traditions that he had studied, and he also taught from his own enlightenment, of course. And he also developed a number of innovative meditation techniques himself, and one of them was dynamic meditation. And now the reason I was interested in doing the dynamic meditation was because there's a part in it where you breathe fast and deep for a while for 10 minutes, and then you do what he calls letting out your madness for several minutes after that, for about 10 minutes after that. It's divided into, I think, 5-10 minute segments, either 4 or 5 10-minute segments. I haven't done it for a long time. Just don't remember exactly. But anyway, I felt, you know, like I say, I was extremely shy and extremely depressed and extremely anxious and worried and everything when I was a kid. So, and I realized that was because I was so emotionally repressed. So the main thing that I've been trying to get help with, the main thing I've been trying to accomplish, you know, for a long time now has been to release my repressed emotions. You know, that's been a particularly huge problem for me. And so I tried the dynamic meditation because it offered some help in releasing repressed emotions. And yeah, it was somewhat helpful. It was somewhat helpful along those lines. It was, you know, it did do something, but it wasn't particularly outstandingly helpful, so I didn't keep doing it for a long time. The next thing I found really helpful as far as releasing repressed emotions after Kundalini Yoga was something called co-counseling, or reevaluation counseling, it's sometimes called. And this is a group that was started by a man named Harvey Jenkins and his associates. They were from Seattle. In the early 1950s, they started developing this. It's kind of a large worldwide movement, and they don't seek much publicity. They kind of like to keep it quiet. But anyway, it's a system where people pair off in pairs, you know, and they take turns counseling each other. And the emphasis is on talking about something that's kind of getting things off your chest, you know, talking about something that's bugging you, talking about something that's on your mind. And the emphasis is on expressing yourself emotionally, you know, in a full and satisfying way that you often don't get to in the course of ordinary conversation out in the world. And what they found was that you know, most people have quite a bit of repressed emotions kind of stuck in their system, and that when by talking to the co-counselor this way and fully expressing their emotions about a subject, this would often release a lot of repressed emotions that a person had been holding in. And when they did that, you know, like I say, the effects were, you know, I've described the effects before. You would feel a burden that you've been carrying all your life had been lifted off of you, and you would feel lighter and freer and more joyful and more true love for other people, and your thinking would become clearer and more objective. You know, you would see things the way they really are instead of through the filters of the delusions that the authorities of the world always try to put on you. But that
right.
was... So that was something else that I did for about a year was the co-counseling. That was very helpful also.
Well, why do you suppose so many of us cling to our emotions and just can't let these things go?
Well, it's because they're kind of actually stuck in the body. It's kind of like, okay, it's like to hold back, you know, emotional expression, it's like a person has to kind of clamp down on them with their muscles, with their diaphragm, you know, with the muscles around the breathing especially. And it's like you kind of get those muscles kind of stuck in a, you know, holding back position, you know. It's like you kind of get so used to holding on to them, you know, or holding the movement of these emotions down that it's like your muscular system kind of gets stuck in that position. And then it takes some undoing, you know, some deliberate and conscious work to release them and to get the muscles to stop being tensed up and to relax again and to let the emotional energy flow fully and freely again. It's like a more or less a frozen position that a person can develop, you know, over a long time of holding back, you know, the expression of certain emotions.
Right, right. Well, you know, having done a lot of meditation and gone through some, you know, enlightening experiences myself, it's amazing to me how many people they're controlled by their emotions, and their behavior is largely robotic, it seems like, for a lot of people. And so I'm really excited that, you know, about your book, because I think it'll wake a lot of people up and start them on the right path. It's really very, very interesting. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and tonight our guest is Joe Alexander. He has written a new book called Renewing Your Life Force, which is about his very many and profound spiritual adventures and learnings and all these different experiences he has had, which has led him on a pathway that is really quite remarkable. The first half of the book is mainly like an adventure story, while the second half is much more practical and gives all sorts of advice and exercises that people can do and to sort of come along on this pathway towards enlightenment. So I want to remind everyone out there that this is a call-in show, and if you would like to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you. I'm going to give you out the toll-free number, and you can call in if you'd like and ask a question of our guest, or if you have a story that you would like to share yourself, we'd love to hear that as well. The phone number is 888-228-4494. I'll repeat that one more time, 888-228-4494. 228-4494. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Now, Joe, you have so many other experiences that you write about. Tibetan rejuvenation rites, Wai, Tan Kung, MSI's ascension. But what really interests me, I have to tell you, is breatharianism. I wrote an article.
Okay.
Yeah, I wrote an article about that. People who live without food.
Uh-huh.
Called Inedia, I-N-E-D-I-A, and uh-huh. You know, I couldn't get anyone to believe me, despite, you know, having gathered some 20 or 30 cases where people have done this, and stretching back throughout the centuries. I mean, this is known among Catholic saints and so on throughout history, and it's very well documented, and there are several cases which are extremely well documented, and I did read Jaz Mahin's book as well, so I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about this. I find it fascinating.
Okay, well, I read Jaz Mahin's book in the early, when was the late 90s, I think, that David Wolfe was promoting her a lot. And so, anyway, I decided to try the process. She promotes in her book, Pranic Nourishment, it's called. She promotes a 21-day process by which she said you would become able to be a breatharian. And, of course, breatharianism is the ability to live just on the sunlight and the air and the prana from the air, you know, without food or water.
Right.
And like you say, apparently there have been a few cases throughout history of people that have actually become able to do this. I think Yogananda mentioned a couple of them in his book, The Autobiography of a Yogi. He said he met a woman in India who was able to do this. Her name was Giribala, I believe. And then he also met Teresa Neumann, a Catholic saint in Germany, Bavaria, I believe, that was said to be able to do this. And then there's reports of a few other people, like you were talking about, that are said to have been able to do this. And Jaz Mahin said in her book that anyone that went through this 21-day process would become able to do it. So I decided to give it a try. And what the process consists of is it's broken up into 3 7-day segments. And for the first 7 days, you're supposed to not eat or drink anything at all. No food, no water for the first 7 days. And then for the second 7 days, you would be able to drink 25% diluted orange juice. That is, you take orange juice and dilute it so it was 25% orange juice and 75% water, and you would be able to drink all of that you wanted for the second 7 days. And then for the third 7 days, she said you could drink all you wanted of 40% diluted fruit juice. You could take any kind of fruit juice you want and dilute it to 40% fruit juice and 60% water, and drink all of that you wanted. And then she said in the book that if you did that 3-week process, then you'd become able to be a breatharian and be able to live without food or water. So I decided to try it, and so I saw that I would have to leave my normal circumstances, leave my normal work for a while to do it. And so what I did was I found a cabin in near a town called Lake Village, Arkansas, in southeastern Arkansas, where I could go and, you know, rent a cabin for cheap for a month. And get away from my normal life, you know, for a while to do it. And so I went through it, and this was in February 1998 that I did it. And so for the first 7 days, you know, I just had no food, no water. And you get very, very thirsty doing it, but I went through it. And I made sure I did it in cool weather because I didn't want to sweat if I wasn't going to be able to drink water. And then the second 7 days, you know, that 25% diluted orange juice sure tastes good after 7 days with no water at all. And then the third week is 40% diluted fruit juice. And you start to feel strength and energy coming back, you know, when you do that. And then supposedly, you know, after that, so I did the process. I went through the whole process. And so supposedly after that, I was supposed to be able to live without food or water. And so, but I found out that for me, it did not work. And, you know, here's a short story of what happened. Anyway, it was at a pecan farm in southeastern Arkansas that I did it. And I'm a sign painter by trade. And the owners of the pecan farm wanted me to paint a billboard for them when I got finished with the process. And so I had to go around to some bigger towns to get the supplies I needed to paint the billboard. And so I drove around to Jackson, Mississippi and Greenville, Mississippi and so on like that, getting the paints and brushes and everything that I needed. Then I came back to start working on the billboard. And first thing I had to do was 4 sheets of plywood. I had to sand them. And, you know, if you're going to sand sheets of plywood by hand, that's pretty vigorous work, and you have to have some strength and you have to have some energy to do it. And I found after doing this 3-week process, I was just very low in energy, didn't have much strength, you know, just didn't have the get up and go to sand those boards. And so then I felt very hungry. And I felt, well, it looks like I better eat something. So I ate some apples, and, you know, some energy came back when I ate those apples, and I was able to start working on those boards again. And when the apples wore off, you know, then I went to town and got some dates and bananas at the grocery store and ate those, and, you know, felt fine after that. You know, I had plenty of energy to get to work on the billboard. But anyway, I found that the process did not work. I still needed food if I was going to have the energy to work. And another strange thing that happened was after I did the process, when I was still kind of thinking that maybe I didn't have to have food anymore, I found myself thinking about all the great work that people have done, you know, all through the centuries, you know, in order to get food to feed themselves and their kids, especially, you know, people have done great creative work and have done some very fine and, you know, some people have done some really rotten things too, but some good and honest people have done some really great work and some really great creative things, you know, to get food to feed themselves and to feed their kids and everything. And I wasn't sure that I liked the idea of not being part of that, you know, universal human struggle anymore. But anyway, I found that, you know, just having done that process did not make me able to be a breatharian, you know, like I say, to be able to work on that billboard and to have the energy to do it. You know, I had to start eating again. So, and I've heard that hundreds of people have done Jasmine Heen's process, and as far as I know, you know, none of them have actually become a breatharian from doing it. So it's not that easy, you know. Maybe there are a few people that have become breatharians, but it's sure not that easy. Put it that way.
Right. Well, I'm not surprised. Perhaps it takes more than one try to do it. But I am a believer, and I'm really persuaded by the evidence that I was able to collect of various case histories. So I find it very interesting, but.
Have you looked into this sunlight gazing into the sun?
Because
some people say that if you will look into the rising sun, you know, so that, you know, when the sun's high in the sky, it'll burn your retinas if you look into the sun. But when it's just coming up, if you will look into the sun, then you can look in it without burning your retinas out. And some people say that if you will make a habit of looking into the rising sun, this will give you so much like nourishment from the sunlight that you'll be able to live without food or with much less food. Some people say that.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, I just find it fascinating. I mean, when we die on the other side, you know, we don't need food to eat. And I think as people raise their vibration, they begin to activate a lot of the abilities that we have on the other side, including, you know, things like levitation and all the whole wide variety of paranormal manifestations. But I don't know. It's just fascinating to me. Now, I don't want to get too late in the show before we get a chance to talk about the second half of your book as well. And because I find that fascinating as well, how you've able to organize things into three basic categories for that things that people can do to help revitalize and regenerate themselves.
Yeah. What I found was, after I'd been through all these things, after I'd done all these things, you know, we've mentioned some of them, I found that for the process of renewing your life force, of all the things that people do to renew their life force, I found that they all fall into one of three categories. The first category I called renewing your spiritual energy, and meditation does that, yoga does that, yoga exercises especially I find good for doing that. Tibetan rejuvenation rites were something I found very valuable for that. So that's the first category I put in, is renewing your spiritual energy. And that's the thing that traditionally religions and spiritual disciplines have been most concerned with, is renewing your spiritual energy, getting full of the Holy Spirit, as the Christians say. And number two is detoxifying your body and improving your nourishment. And when you get the waste matters and poisons out of your body, as you do by fasting and living on raw food diet, and there's some cleansing programs that many people go on these days, when you get the waste matters and poisons out of your body and get optimum nourishment from raw foods, then you find that your energy level increases dramatically. So that's point number two. And point number three is releasing repressed emotions. You know, like I say, if your emotions are blocked from flowing freely by holding in repressed emotions, then that'll be like a hindrance. That'll be an obstruction to the complete and free movement of your life force. So the third part of renewing your life force, the third thing you can do to renew your life force, is to release repressed emotions. So what I do in part two of this book is I give a three-part program of the best processes that I've found, the things I've found most effective for accomplishing these three objectives of renewing your spiritual energy, detoxifying your body, and optimizing your nourishment, and releasing repressed emotions.
Very, very interesting. Well, I like what you you mentioned, that a lot of programs only hit one of these areas. So by hitting all three at once, it sort of really, how would you put it? Covers all bases.
Yeah, that's the idea. I found that what happens fairly often is that a person will get into one thing and kind of think that this is the total solution, and they'll even put down the value of the others. You know, like I've often met people that were into yoga, for instance, and they think that if they do this meditation or if they do these yoga exercises, something like that, then they don't have to worry too much about their diet. You know, that the yoga is going to be so helpful that it'll overcome the effects of a bad diet, things like that. And I've often met Christians who are like that. You know, they say as long as you have Jesus and the Holy Spirit in your life, then you can eat whatever crap you want and drink soda pops and something like that, and you know, and you should stay healthy, this kind of stuff. But no, what I have found is that it's best to, you know, if you really want to be all you can be and enjoy life to the full, you know, it's best to do all three. You know, it's best not to not neglect or negate or poo-poo the value of any of these, but to do all three of them.
Right. And here's the best part. They're free. They don't cost you a dime. And so people really have no excuse to, other than their own laziness. Why aren't more people, do you think, doing these sort of things? What's keeping us so, why isn't it more mainstream, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, that's a darn good question. That's kind of what I ask all the time. I suppose one reason is laziness, and another reason is kind of egotism. You know, people tend to think I'm doing just fine. You know, as I am, I don't need anything. You know, I don't need anything like this. You know, I'm really fine. You know, I'm doing just fine. You know, without something like that, I don't need somebody else to show me the way or stuff like that. And so those do seem to be the two main reasons: just laziness and, you know, egotism, thinking you're just finding where you are. And I think I was kind of saved from too much of it. And, you know, of course, I'm just as egotistical as anybody else. But, you know, because I was just so darn miserable when I was a kid and so darn depressed and shy and anxious and nervous and worried and all this kind of stuff, you know, because I was so much of a wretched failure in life, you know, when I was a kid, I realized I really needed some help of some kind. You know, I couldn't say I'm doing pretty well as I am.
Right. Well, I think people are unhappy. They should, you know, start looking into things like this. Another thing I think that keeps people from doing stuff like you've done is skepticism. I think that they don't believe that they can change their lives. And that's what's great about your book, is you lay it out really simply, and that these are all things that, you know, it doesn't take a lot of effort to figure out how to do. I mean, these are not really brain surgery type exercises. So,
yeah. So. And another point that I try to make in the book is that, you know, there's no need to waste years and years and years on seeing if something is going to work. Like I quote a famous yogi, Babaji, and I've heard him quoted. This was Leonard Orr's guru, Babaji. And Babaji, I've heard quoted as saying, try something new for 40 days. And if you don't feel benefit in that time, then don't bother with it. And if you feel benefit from it, then keep on doing it. So if somebody, you know, proposes something to you that's supposed to help you and, you know, give you enlightenment and give you more energy, renew your life force, whatever, you know, it's like ask them, well, what's a reasonable time limit for me to try this, you know, and I'll try it for whatever you say is a reasonable time limit, say up to 40 days. And if I don't feel, you know, much better from doing it in that time, if I don't feel good results within that time, then I won't bother with it anymore. You know, it's like sometimes people seem to get the idea that you're supposed to, you know, discipline yourself to practice something for enlightenment for years and years and years, and, you know, maybe you won't feel any particular results, but, you know, you go on anyway because supposedly someday at the end of years and years and years of practice of the discipline, you're going to get enlightened. Like in the book, I told a story about, I once heard about a guy that got into Nichi Renchosho Buddhism, and he chanted Nam-myoho Renge-kyo every day for 10 years. And he wasn't sure if he was getting enlightened yet or not. And I said, well, that's too long of a test period. You know, I think that 40 days is more like it. If you don't feel like something is helping you within 40 days, then don't bother with it.
Right. Well, I don't expect enlightenment is necessarily like flipping a switch. It's just something that happens in stages.
Yeah.
At least that's been my experience. Another thing I wanted to ask you about is, which I find very interesting, is toning. I've done some of that, and I know there are exercises that involve toning and mantras and that sort of thing to do astral travel. And I just wondered what your take on the whole toning phenomena is.
Okay, people seem to use toning for different purposes, and the purpose for which I advocated, I have found it to be the most effective process that I've ever tried for releasing repressed emotions. You know, we talked about some of the other processes that I've tried. You know, there was the rebirthing and the dynamic meditation and the Kundalini Mahi Yoga and the co-counseling and orgone therapy, orgonomic therapy, Reiki therapy, I did some of that, and Dianetics, another process for releasing repressed emotions. But the most effective process I've ever tried for releasing repressed emotions is the toning. It's very simple. You just hold sustained tones with your voice over and over and over. And it's very simple and very easy to do. You do have to do it quite a bit, you know, to get results. But I've found that it works, you know, faster and more powerfully, and it's also so simple and absolutely free, you know, that I found it to be the best and most effective process for releasing repressed emotions that I've ever tried.
Oh, interesting. Very, very interesting. So what inspired you to put together this book, Renewing Your Life Force? I know a lot of people who have a lot of profound experiences like you, but they keep it to themselves, and I just wondered what inspired you to share all these amazing experiences you've had.
Well, I guess the reason I wanted to do the book was I felt that I had kind of come up with a kind of unique package, kind of a package of the three, banging on the three nails. You know, we were talking about the three things to do to renew your life force before. And I felt like I had come up with something of a unique package of three very effective ways to bang on all three nails that, you know, didn't cost you, that was completely self-help, and anybody could do, and it wouldn't cost you anything beyond your normal living expenses. So I thought this was kind of a unique package that nobody had ever quite put together before, that anybody could use, you know, in the privacy of their own home for free. And that said, that, you know, putting out the book with this information in it would be a very worthwhile, very valuable service that I could get out into the world, because hopefully some people that read it, you know, would try doing it and would get a substantial amount of help from it, would get a lot of help from it. So I felt like I had something valuable to contribute, you know, to something, some valuable knowledge in a nice, concise little package that could possibly help quite a few people. So that's why I decided to write the book.
Wow, very, very, very interesting. Yeah, I think you're totally right on money with that one. And I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people. God knows, this is a time where people can use this kind of help with all that's going on these days. Now, we've got about 5 minutes left on the show, so I want to give you a chance to sort of wrap it up if we haven't talked about anything you feel people need to know, or tell people where they can get a hold of your book, or if you have a way to be contacted if people are interested in that. Just basically let people know what you feel that they need to know.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, the book is published by Ex Libris, and you could get it either at www.exlibris.com, Xlibris. That's one way to get it. Or you can call Ex Libris at 1-888-795-4274, extension 7876. That's 888-795-4274, extension 7876. If anybody would like to read a little bit more of my writing along these lines, I've just started a blog on WordPress. If somebody would like to read some more of what I said about this kind of subject, they can go to, it's http://biospiritualregeneration.wordpress.com. And if anybody would like to email me, they can email me at joekevalex, joekevalex, at hotmail.com. Or if anybody wants to call me, they can call me here in Fayetteville, Arkansas at 479-442-6194. That's 479-442-6194. And I think that's pretty complete contact information.
I should say so, yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you even more for writing this book. I'm really excited about it, and I hope that a lot of people read it, because I think it does have the potential to really help a lot of people. So thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for inviting me on your show, Preston. It sounds like you've had quite a few interesting experiences yourself. So is there some place, like, do you have a website where somebody can find out more about, you and your experiences or something like that, or have you written anything?
Oh, yeah, I'm actually have written a number of books. Let me see, it's 14 at last count, and my website is my name.
Okay.
PrestonDennett.com, and yeah, you can read about, some of my books there if you're interested in I've written mostly about UFOs, but, out-of-body experiences, levitation, all sorts of things, ghosts. So, yeah, I'm very interested in this field, and we still have 1 minute. I just wanted to ask you while we still have time, because this is a question I always like to ask my guests, is have you seen a UFO?
I seem to be the last person in the world that hasn't seen a UFO, no. Just about everybody I know seems to have told me about seeing a UFO one time or another, but I've got a neighbor that says he was kicked out of the Air Force for reporting that he saw a UFO, and I seem to be about the last person in the world that hasn't seen a UFO.
Well, I imagine it won't be a long time, because they're out there, and I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon.
I do feel like an attraction for everything Pleiadian, like whenever I hear people talking about the people from the Pleiades, and whenever I hear about the lifestyle and philosophy of life and all this kind of stuff about the people from the Pleiades, that's very attractive to me. I seem to have a kind of a pull in that direction, but of course I've never met a Pleiadian or seen a Pleiadian spaceship or anything. No, I seem to be the last person in the world that hasn't seen a UFO.
Well, I'm sorry about that, but don't worry. It'll happen, I'm sure. Thanks again, Joe. It's been a blast. You were a wonderful guest, and I just want to thank you again for coming on the show.
Well, thank you again very much, Preston, for inviting me.
You're welcome. Well, everyone, that is our show for tonight. You have been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Joe Alexander, and he has written a very, very interesting book, which I highly recommend. It's called Renewing Your Life Force. It's available online at Xlibris, Xlibris. Is that correct?
That's right, yes.
And, check it out. I think you'll find it very interesting and potentially life-changing. It is a wonderful guidebook, I think, for people who are interested in spiritual enlightenment. And God, who isn't interested in spiritual enlightenment? I think that's what we're all striving for in this crazy world. Well, that's, again, our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope you can join us again next week when we bring on another exciting guest on UFOs and the Paranormal on the BBS Network. Until then, have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.
Good evening, and welcome to Bloggin Broadcasting Service. This is Nevin Campanella, introducing you to a new dimension in radio talk show. BBS is the frontline reporting service of the extraordinary and sometimes cataclysmic events which affect our lives. Listen and become aware of the knowledge that has been hidden from your view.
Hi, this is Mariko May. I'm really glad you're enjoying BBSRadio.com. I would like to invite you to my personal website at www.maricome.com.
In 1971, U.S. President Nixon declared a war on cancer. 30-plus years later, it continues, taking the lives of loved ones and consuming billions in currency all over the world. Why is that, one must ask? A prudent question, as 15-plus cultures around the planet remain free of this and other diseases that are rife in the modern world. What are the factors in their lives that enable this to be? Well, actually, the answers have been known for a very, very long time. For further information, visit apricotshop.co.uk, whose mission is researching, providing information and supplying carefully selected products that potentially provide protection for people's health, along with reducing the risk of contracting lifestyle-related diseases. Put you and your family's well-being first. Prevention is undoubtedly the key to a vibrant existence.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kara Johnstad, and you're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBSRadio.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Senia Sieber. And you're listening to Dr. Bell. Well, I forgot to say who I am. Sorry about that.
Yeah, go ahead. We'll keep that done. Be sure and keep that in there. I like those improv. Yeah, go ahead. Especially with a laugh and all that.
Yeah. Who am I? I just forgot.
disguise your lies with sincerity. You know I love it when you try to sell it. I love the way you tell it. I see you digging down deep where belief's supposed to be.